get a fresh start feeling for less. At Matalan, there's a huge 20% off homeware and kidswear. Get your home and garden prepped for the sunny weather and kit out the kids too. Shop in-store and online at matalan.co.uk. T's and C's apply.
Hey everybody, JJ Cooper, Josh Norris, Jeff Ponce, another Baseball America Prospect podcast, and we are talking all about the top 100 again today, but this time we're going to drill a lot deeper on one of the most fun, no, the most fun debate that we had in this one, which is, hey, we've got, you know, the Roman Anthonys and all at the top, but these are the guys who are AAA or in the majors, going to graduate soon. Then you got this group of really talented, really young shortstops, one at AA, one at high A, one at low A. How do you line them up? That's what we're going to talk about. There's a lot of stuff about this at baseballamerica.com right now. But Josh, Jeff, great to see you guys. Before we dive into that, dive into the Jesus Mate versus Leo DeVries versus Sebastian Walcott debate. Had a ton of promotions. I feel like that we can say that every week when we record this, that there are a ton of promotions. But the one that really jumped out to me this week is Mike Sirota, who we've kind of talked about how he's kind of felt stuck at low A because they had an outfield in Great Lakes of top 100 prospect Josue DePaula, top 100 prospect Zahir Hope, 2024 first-rounder Kendall George. Well, the Dodgers decided, there's a DH. We can rotate a DH spot around. So they brought Sirota up as well. My question is, can you think of a better outfield prospect group? That's two top 100 prospects. It's a last-year first-round pick. And Sirota, who wasn't a first-round pick last year, but came into the year as a potential first-round pick, didn't have a great year, but also leads all of minor league baseball right now in slugging percentage and OPS, had a great debut so far. I'll start with you, Josh. Like, what's the best prospect outfield you've ever seen?
It's probably for a very limited basis, but I saw a couple games of with West Virginia at the time, which had Jared Kelenic and Julio Rodriguez on the same group. I talked before where it got on the podcast, one of the Thunder teams I covered back in the day, build its outfield as Jose, or as the outfield of dreams, with Jose Tabata, Austin Jackson, and Colin Curtis. Three big leaguers, but
not one of dreams.
Not one of dreams. I could think they would all, Austin Jackson was like an 8-year big leaguer, but that's about it. And I'm sure there's other ones we're missing, but this is a pretty darn good group. And I'm curious what Jeff will have to say.
Yeah. What about you, Jeff?
Yeah, I'm like trying to sort of like go back in the recesses of my memory to outfields that had like three stellar prospects, because I know that it's obviously happened before. The one that kind of comes to mind for me, though, and I can't remember the year with Pawtucket. It might have been 2012, 2013, somewhere around there. But I know that there was JBJ, Jackie Bradley Jr., and Mookie Betts, which I just think long term looks really good when I look back on it. But I don't know. A lot of the teams that I get to see up here in the Northeast consistently, at least, like not a lot of outfield depth. I mean, I suppose that, I've seen like Christian Campbell and Roman Anthony in the same outfield, which based on the rankings is probably better than Mookie and Jackie Bradley Jr. I just as prospects, but I don't know. I don't know if I've had a trio like that where I was like, wow, like, outside of spring breakout games or backfield games where they can kind of crunch talent together. I don't think I can recall like, wow, we got three top 100 prospects, potential type guys, or even three top 200 type prospects, all sort of bunched together. So off the top of my head, there's ones that come to mind.
That's the thing that stands out to me is that there's definitely been teams that have better, like their number one prospect. Like I was making the joke before we started recording that any team Mike Trout was on coming up to the minors had one of the best prospect outfields you've ever seen because it had Mike Trout, right? Bryce Harper coming up through the minors, great prospect, whoever was around him. But to have four prospects like that in one outfield, four guys who, again, all of them project to to be big leaguers, and you're hoping that you're going to get a couple of regulars, several regulars out of that. That's really rare. That's something that really stands out. But that's not what we're here to talk about today, because today we want to talk about shortstops, because we've talked about that we love to say that this is kind of a great era for young shortstop talent in the minors. We have a ton of shortstops. Our top 10 shortstops in the top 100 at this moment all rank on the top 26 on our top 100. That's 10 in the top 26 is kind of absurd. But most importantly, and I'll post it here, number 6, Jesus Mate, number 7, Leo DeVries, number 8, Sebastian Walcott. Josh, you just wrote one of the stories up at baseballamerica.com about this right now. Let's start with Mate. Let's kind of talk about, so you got to see, you got to see Mate last year for us, because you went down to the DSL. What stands out? What is the thing that most stands out to you about him right now, and what makes him such an elite prospect?
Well, I mean, I saw him last year, but I didn't see anything close to the two games I got were not representative. I got a one at bat game in the DSL All-Star game and a game where he did nothing in a 1-0 win. So this year, you see it a lot more. And what jumps out is the bat speed immediately. I mean, I was talking to someone on Milwaukee radio the other day, and it so happens that I've seen Mate a few times this year, and I might see him tonight, quite frankly. And you look at his bat speed and you realize that, you know, he's 70 at the time, just turned 18 the other day. And then I went and watched a game, a high school game, a real high school game, not a showcase or whatever game. And it's like, these people are the same age. And one of them looks like he's got about 90% of Bryce Harper's bat speed. And the other looks like a future insurance adjuster. Like, it's, shocking to see a guy that age just absolutely whip it through the zone with that ease. And, I also mentioned that same interview. The thing that really jumps out about him is, like Chorio a couple of years ago, is it's not that he's just a ball of tools. He knows how to play baseball. And that's not normal for someone his age at any level. Like, you're talking about domestic 17-year-olds, any kind of 17-year-old. He has, there's some feel, there's some savvy with his game. He's not just here to grip and rip. He can go the other way. He can hang back on breaking balls. He can do a lot of really fun stuff on the field. I mean, there's still polish to be applied, understandably. But it's really interesting to see how they've had two guys come through there in the last couple of years with this combination of insane tools and real great feel for the game. And I was hard pressed to believe that they were going to have another talent of that level come through here again. And they do. And they might have two or three of them on that club, quite frankly. We'll get to that later.
But yeah, so Mate just turned 18. I put on the graphic 18 years old because he turned 18 on the 8th, May 8th. So he's played basically this season so far as a 17-year-old. I can't help because I remember watching Andrew Jones play in the low A, it's that time Sally League, as a 17-year-old who then turned 18. I just checked. Andrew did a little earlier. He turned 18 like on April 23rd of that year. I will say in Andrew's case, he did have a 3-home run game before he turned 18. So that's the thing that always sticks with me. But Jeff, I remember talking to you in the offseason about Mate, and the thing that does stand out, like, there's always projection to this. There's always, there are things we cannot know. However, there are also things that we can feel more comfortable about now than we could have 20 years ago. I would say 20 years ago, when I started at BA, over 20 years ago now, I guess, it had been really hard. I don't care how loud the scouting feedback we got about someone like Mate was, it would be really hard to put him as high as he was on the top 100 this year for a player who had yet to play in the U.S. at all, who entire resume at that point was the DSL. But Mate, who's lived up to it so far in low A as well, there are things that we can study now that we couldn't study back then when it comes to swing decisions, when it comes to contact ability, when it comes to power, all that. What is it about Mate that just stands out for someone who was 17, who just turned 18 while we're recording this last week?
Yeah, I think it's just his ability to sort of marry plate skills and plate discipline that's really advanced for a player at his age with power. And it's not like just good power for a teenager, which I think like some of the numbers last year, like EV wise, you'd say, oh, this projects really well because of how young he is. We don't see this. Now he's putting up thus far this season as a switch hitter, you know, who's played most of the season as a 17-year-old in one of the three hardest leagues to hit in, right? We say Southern League, Midwest League early in the season, and Carolina League, just in terms of the actual run environments. And he's hitting for a ton of power. The underlying EV numbers are loud. It's like above major league average stuff, 90 mile per hour average EV. You know, pretty much it's a 105.9, 106, 90th percentile. You know, doesn't have a negative hard hit launch angle, which you'll see with a lot of these kids that do hit the ball this hard. Still needs to like, it's not a super high barrel rate. The angles aren't great yet. Some of that, I think, is the right-handed swing is a little bit more contact-oriented than the left-handed swing. You know, so I don't have the numbers broken down by each side, but, you know, it's pretty clear to see that this guy does so many things well. And I think the thing that's unique about him is of the switch hitting shortstops we've seen over the last decade, how many of them this early had actualized power with plate skills? A lot of them had plate skills. A lot of them had twitch and, you know, this guy's going to hit 300 and hits the ball over the field. And it's a lot of nice line drives, but how many of them had that plus this sort of top end power that we're seeing from Mate that young? Even among the top shortstop prospects we can remember in the last decade, I don't remember any of them having this level of power this early. So I think that's one thing about Mate that just separates him. And I think it was the conversation all off season of like, this is really unusual. This is really outlier. Like this is the true meaning of that term that's consistently overused, you know, certainly by myself. And I think that's just where we're at. It's like, all right, he's taking another step forward. And you know, it's not like he's one of these guys that is overly passive, just trying to work walks. And that's how the WRC plus and everything looks good. He is aggressive. He doesn't swing at junk. You know, it's almost Soto-esque in terms of that kind of like, you know, cockiness, arrogance when he's in the box. It kind of is that, you know, where he's kind of showing up the pitcher a little bit when he's getting junk pitches. And it's like, you know, come in the zone of me, I dare you. He's ready to attack. Like his zone swing rate's really high, you know, so it's all the stuff you want to see. Like there's not a lot of sort of warts on this profile, that even the amount of whiff that he has in zone, like it's at a very tolerable level because he's actually trying to hit for impact, trying to do damage and make things happen in games. And he's just a really fun player to watch. Of all of these guys who are all fun, he's the most fun because there's a little bit of that like Acuna kind of swagger to him, you know, that makes baseball fun to watch and follow.
With Mate, defensively, they're working on his versatility this year. He's obviously sharing time with Luis Peña, another very good prospect. Where do you think, you know, what are you hearing from scouts about where he's going to end up long term?
I think it's probably going to be either second base or third base. I think, again, I've said this a lot on podcasts, it's you can listen to what teams say, or you can believe what they show you. And they're moving him around second, shortstop, a little bit of second last year, mostly shortstop and third this year. Scouts I talked to think it's probably one of those other two positions in the long run, just because he's not maybe the rangiest guy in the world. He does got the arm strength to play third base for sure. He needs to get the internal clock worked out a little bit better. But I think the bat is going to play no matter where he winds up. And I think they also just have better shortstop options coming. I mean, Cooper Pratt, for one, Joey Ortiz also currently in Milwaukee, although this may be a, who knows what he looks like by the time Mate is ready to get up there. But Pratt is the better defensive shortstop among their group. So if you have to move Mate to third base or second base or what have you, I don't think you might get more defensive value. Kind of like, you know, you had, I don't want to compare these two players, like with Gunnar Henderson. Gunnar Henderson a few years ago when you moved him around.
Although, again, in Henderson's case, he ended up being a shortstop pretty much full time because we'll see with these guys. Like, you know, there's still kind of an open end. The one thing I'll also say with the Brewers is the Brewers are definitely a team who they really want to kind of field shortstops kind of all around the infield. We see that with how they had, you know, when Terang's healthy, Bryce Terang and Joey Ortiz. You know, we'll see that with Cooper Pratt coming up.
And that's the Padres model too, obviously, that you wrote about last year at some point.
Yeah. If you having shortstops is a very good thing. So that leads us to, that's who we had at our top of this group. But we do, I would say, if you want to make a case for one of these other guys to be number one out of this group, Josh, like you said in your story, it's very close. You know, that this is something where all of these guys could, every one of these three could end up being the number one prospect in baseball at some point. Is that?
Yeah. I mean, that's the crux of the story, is that I assume the five guys at the top of our list are going to debut and or graduate by the end of the year, or graduate by the end of the year. I mean, between the time I started it and the time I finished it, Christian Campbell did graduate. And he's reflected there. So you're left with Roman Anthony and Bubba Chandler and Jackson Jobe and Roki Sasaki. And Roman Anthony is the only one of those guys. Well, Chandler hasn't either. Roman and Bubba need to debut, but I think, barring something silly happening, both those guys are going to reach their threshold by the end of the year. I would sure hope so. That would leave, you know, the trio we're talking about as your potential top three of the biggest guys you're going to have as the who is number one next year. And quite frankly, depending on when these guys graduate, maybe at some point this year, you might have to have that discussion. I mean, I'll throw it back to you, JJ, and just say, like, in recent memory, number one coming into this season has been fairly cut and dried. I don't remember a really hot
best years of the years. It's not. That's what I would say, is like when you have a year like what we had a couple of years ago, we had Adley, and we had Bobby Witt Jr., and we had Julio Rodriguez. And the answer, I think we said at the time, was basically like, the answer is yes.
Like, well, I think the answer was Shohei.
No, that's a different year.
Oh, just I'll a get different to
that. Year. that he was Shohei was not eligible that year. So the answer that year was not Shohei. The answer was, you know, but you had those guys. And again, like if you said right now, you'd say Bobby Witt Jr. ended up being the right answer so far out of that group. But the other two are all-stars as well. A few years before that, we did have a year where I want to say it was Shohei Ohtani, Ronald Acuna, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And then we had another year where it was Acuna, Tatis, and Vladdy. And again, when you have trios like that, great. Like, you can argue it whichever way you want. Like, we had the year, okay, it wasn't a trio in hindsight, but you had the year years ago when it was Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, and Matt Moore. Okay, the answer there was, you know.
Which, by the way, as a brief callback, there's your best outfield, by the way. I'm cheating a little bit. Arizona Fall League 2011 had Harper and Trout. And at the time, big-time prospect Gary Brown. They can't all make it, but
first rounder. I mean, he was a first rounder. Yeah.
Traded for a pretty good player, too.
So, but to take it to our next guy. So, Leo DeVries, Jeff. When this year began, you could always talk about the Padres move guys fast. And you talked about how difficult the environment can be in the Midwest League, especially in April. Don't tell that to DeVries, because Leo DeVries has gone out there and been really, really impressive. And when we say impressive as for young for the league, much like we could say with Jesus Mate, you could also say with DeVries that DeVries could be draft eligible for this draft in the U.S., if he was in the U.S., as a high school player still. That's the age he's at. And here he is. He's ripping up the Midwest League.
Get a fresh start feeling for less. At Matalan, there's a huge 20% off homeware and kidswear. Get your home and garden prepped for the sunny weather and kit out the kids too. Shop in-store and online at matalan.co.uk. T's and C's apply.
Yeah, I think that's what the most remarkable thing is about DeVries is the environment that he's in. You know, arguably the first 2 months of the season, the hardest place to hit. As young as he is, obviously does have, you know, a full year more or less when you add an AFL, but pretty much a full season of full season ball there, doubled up on the full season phrase. But I think I look at the underlying profile and he doesn't have as much power as the other two. He doesn't hit the ball as hard as Mate. He doesn't hit the ball as hard as Walcott, who hits it the hardest of the three. But I do think in terms of like actual hit tool, it might be a 70. It's probably a hard 60. You know, good bat to ball skills, excellent swing decisions. You know, it's like a 20% chase rate with like a 45% swing rate. So that 25% gap, like I look at that gap sometimes and that's telling me that, you know, he's aggressive. He's obviously very aggressive, so high swing rate in the zone, you know, but also makes a ton of contact in the zone and just at anything he swings at. The batted ball angles are really good. It's a high average launch angle. His hard hit launch angle, which is like 95 plus mile per hour balls in play, is 24 degrees, which is like perfect. It's like you're hitting the ball in the air consistently. And he's got an 11 degree pull side launch angle, which is not something you necessarily see from guys this young who hit the ball in the air consistently. So like the spray chart, all that sort of stuff, the skills are there. He should get stronger. You know, the EVs will probably climb up. He's never going to be like, you know, he's never going to be a guy that's in like the top 10, you know, on your StatCast leaderboard for hardest hit, you know, or average EVs or max EVs or anything like that. But I think when you look at like the totality of his ability just to consistently hit and optimize, you know, contact to his pull side, that's a really good quality. And I think, you know, we've seen players like this, like a Mookie Betts has a very similar sort of batted ball profile to DeVries. And yeah, I think it's really exciting to see what he's doing at this point. And, you know, you hear the feedback, you know, regarding his defense and that sort of thing. And I think, you know, there's a really interesting, you know, well-rounded prospect and player here.
That's one of the things that stands out, Josh, is that this is a pure hitter who also is a surefire shortstop, isn't he?
Yeah, it's, you know, when I talked to a pro director about it, that's kind of what jumped out to him at first. It was interesting too, because he mentioned that the batting practice was not super overwhelming, and then he got into the game and it's a whole different animal. And he's out here, you know, just picking the right pitches to swing at. Well, he's getting his pitch to swing at. The wart was swing decisions sometimes. But when he did pick the right pitch, good Lord, did he crush it. I mean, we talked about his gem of of the season this year was a cycle with two home runs, which, you know, doesn't happen all that often. I think the MILB story mentioned Colt Keith was the last one to do it. And he was pretty good in the minor league. He still has yet to kind of get traction in the big leagues. But the point is, really talented player did it. And this is another one. And unfortunately, I hate to bring this guy up, but Wander Franco did it a bunch of years ago too. And we remember what kind of prospect he was. And we'll move on from him from there. But the point is, DeVries really drew high marks from the people I talked to, which is unsurprising given where we've ranked him, but is a little, it's still hard to wrap your brain around the fact that there are three of these guys, and we haven't even talked about Walcott yet. They're all 13 months of each other, and they're all just have all the earmarks of superstars, which is kind of insane to see at such a young age.
And they're kind of straight, you know, we have the oldest who's still incredibly young is at double A, the one who's in the middle is at high A, and the one who's the youngest is in low A. But as you said, there's only a 13-month gap there. And every one of these guys is playing at a level where the vast majority of pitchers who they're facing are 3-4 years older than them.
And none of them had orthodox development paths. Walcott, I believe, is the only one who played in the Arizona Complex League. And that one, that he got there after 9 games in the DSL. And if you look up those stats, he was hitting like 180 at the time of the promotion. So it's not generally a number that gets you promoted. But the other two didn't spend a day in the ACL. And they're just out here ripping people apart.
In 23, he starts the year in the DSL, 9 games, then goes to the ACL, and then ends the year in the Sally League in 2023, you know, in his, the year he signed. 24, Sally League to Double A to finish the year. And here he is starting the year in Double A this year. And it would not be crazy to say that he, you know, that he finishes the year in Triple A at least, depending, you know, kind of just looking at the normal way that they've promoted him. Like, okay, even if he just spends most of the year in Frisco, then gets a taste of Double A at the end, I mean, Triple A at the end of the year to prep him for next year, which means he would be in Triple A at an age that is, again, really young for a player who's knocking on the door of the big leagues. This is also, though, even though he's in Double A, is it fair to say, like when you were talking to scouts about him, there's more upside here, but there's also a little bit more work to do when it comes to kind of the, for him to get to the totality of his package, especially at the plate?
Sure. And he started slowly last year. You mentioned that he went from the Arizona Complex League to the Sally League. Well, to refresh people, that's rookie ball to high A. He's never played a day of low A. So that's even more weird part of his development track. So, I mean, you're talking about a guy, again, who last year was his first full year as a pro. I know he's one of these guys that seems like he should be 25 by now, by the time, for how long he's been famous, but he's still a teenager. And, you know, Double A is still the separator. You're going to face more advanced pitchers. You're going to face, and granted, he is in a pretty good hitting environment, but, you know, they can pick apart a teenager in that classification right now. So yeah, if he's not, you know, some superstar right out the gate in Double A, I wouldn't be worried about it. He's hitting the ball hard. He's super athletic. He's really fun to watch, and he'll get it by the summer. I wouldn't be surprised if he's just, you know, a regular, the top like 3 spots in our hot sheet every week. And
he was last year.
I would say it's 99.9%. He finishes the year in AAA, with the 1.1% being, just because of the way the staggered schedules work, there's going to be that extra like week or so of AAA anyway. The only way I would see it not happening is if they really want to leave him there and Frisco is in the playoffs, yada, yada, yada. But I would say that's like the only scenario that he doesn't move. I guess the other one would be just he does go in the tank, but I don't expect that happening. He'll be on the cusp of the big leagues next year, and he has a very solid case to be the number one prospect in the game by the end of January or February next year. And we wrote this article at some point before the season about,
you know, we predicted him that he would be our number one prospect.
And like, I think we had to stop people from picking him as number one overall because it was like, okay, we can't have it be unanimous. This isn't interesting.
And that's, so by the way, I will note he is 19, March 14th, 2006. So he turned 19. He's in Double A. He's returning to Double A. He turned 19 during spring training. Jeff, the other thing that stands out with him, when we talk about Mata, you talk about the swing decisions, you talk about him already having power. When you talk about DeVries, you talk about the hit tool and how advanced it is, and kind of how well-rounded he could be. In the case of Sebastian Walcott, you said like DeVries isn't going to be the guy who shows up on the top 10 StatCast EVs every night. Sebastian Walcott at 6'4", 100% could be the guy who shows up on the StatCast top 10s most every night for highest EV of the night, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly the type of player that Walcott is, you know, he's much more of sort of like the freak of this group, just in terms of his bigger body, you know, just louder tools, I think is probably the way to put it. And I, and it's weird to say that when you're putting him in the context of somebody like Jesus Mate, who's pretty tooled up, right? Himself, but, yeah, I mean, just even from the jump, when he came into pro ball, started hitting the ball extremely hard. You know, the angles aren't great, but kind of good enough. The big question was, is there enough plate skills here? You know, is there enough bat to ball ability consistently? Is he going to make, you know, good swing decisions consistently? I think over, you know, probably since around this time last year, when everything sort of seemed to turn to color for Walcott, the numbers have been great. The underlying stuff has been much better. His bat to ball ability has been much better, and he didn't sacrifice any of that power. And like I said, even the angles are pretty good. You know, the air pull numbers are pretty good, and, you know, his underlying numbers of, you know, he's kind of been underperforming even based on how well he's been hitting the ball. So should be interesting to see how all this shakes out. But I do think Walcott, despite maybe not the loudest slash line in comparison to the other two, is every bit as impressive this season, just based on what he done against the age to level competition, et cetera.
Especially Double A. I mean, I know the Texas League is a good place to hit, but Double A's we talk about is one of the big jumps out there, and he's handling that big jump as a just turned 19 year old, which is something that you do not see very often. And I love to talk about it. Like, the reality of it is guys who can handle those, when we, there's a reason we put out the youngest players at each level every year. And I've been doing that for BA for 15 plus years now, because you look at those lists, and when you filter out the guy who's there because, oh, we needed a guy to fill in for a week kind of guys, but the guys who are regulars at those levels, at those ages, the hit rate's really, really good. Because if you can hit at those levels when you're 3-4 years younger than everyone else there, one of the things with that is when you can do that, it kind of means that the game's going to slow down for you at the age where most everyone else is figuring it out, right? Like, if you're figuring out Double A as a 22-year-old, then you go to Triple A as a 23-year-old, big leagues as a 24-year-old. You kind of hit that point of, oh, I know what big league pitchers are doing when you're like 26, 27, when you're kind of hitting your last peak of athleticism and all. And then kind of like, then the skills kind of keep going up as your tools go down. The guys who can do that, figure that out at 22, 23, their skills are going up while the tools are still staying at their top level. The bat speed's still there, all that, where that kind of gives you that next gear that other guys don't have. Okay, we've talked about all three of them. Now, and I'll put myself on the spot too. If you had to say, I can't say, I'm old enough now to say, if you said, okay, because these guys are young enough, we're not going to fully know an answer for this potentially for another, I mean, I hate to say it, but 20 years. Jesus Mate is 18. Leo DeVries is 18. 20 years from now, they could be still playing in the big leagues. They could be 38-year-olds playing in the big leagues. As much as I would love to be on this podcast 20 years from now, I don't know if I'm going to have more than 40 years at BA. So someone else can at BA hopefully can be keeping score on this. But if you had to say, who do you think is going to be the best all-round player of this trio right now? And you can change your answer next year or later this year, because this is really, the margins are really slim. But I'll start with you, Jeff. Who would you say right now you're like, okay, that's the one to me who's going to be the best of this group?
I think it's Mate. I think the upside, the combination of twitch, you know, the power, the bat to ball ability, I think the angles will get better. I think it's Mate. I think what the ceiling is, the upside, that's the one that I go with. And I kind of like all three players, but I think it's Mate.
What about you, Josh?
Well, I can say what I wasn't going to say on last podcast, which was if we had done a full super overhaul of the top 100 last time and we voted and all that, I was going to vote Jesus Madé number one overall right now. I didn't expect to be this wowed by him this year, but holy cow. Like, it's just off the charts, everything. And I don't care if he has to move to third base or what have you. It's just electricity from first pitch to last. And I just cannot believe I've seen this kind of player twice in the last 3 years, whatever it is.
In the same ballpark.
It's a heck of a player to close out this ballpark with. In the same ballpark, in the same system. And I'll say it again, Luis Peña on that same team, man, he's going to be pretty special too.
There's a reason he's in our top 100 too.
Hat tip to their international department, because they have absolutely nailed it over the last few years.
I probably, at the end of the day, lean Madé as well. There is a reason he's number one of this group on our list right now. However, I will say, like, okay, if I was going to make the – I can make the case for either of the other guys too. The case for Walcott is that, okay, if you get 35-plus home run power from a shortstop, or if he outgrows it down the road, third baseman, that's a stud. That's a perennial all-star. And the case for DeVries is that as good as Madé's hit tool is, and you know, you could maybe argue that DeVries has a better hit tool, when you consider the age, when you consider how well he gets to his power, he is the best defender of this group. If you told me that he ends up being the best of this group because you're just like, oh, this is a middle of the order bat who also is one of the better shortstops in the big, like, I remember with Francisco Lindor when he was coming up, who, by the way, also played, man, Miguel Cabrera, Francisco Lindor, Jackson Churio, Jesus Madé. If you live in Zebulon, North Carolina, you have had a pretty great experience for the last few years. But when Lindor was coming up as a shortstop, it was a hit tool, and there was real questions about, okay, how much power is there going to be? Hit tools like that usually get to power down the road. And so that's the case I could make for DeVries. Josh, before we wrap this up, you also have another piece looking at this and looking at guys who could end up being part of this discussion. Yep. So who are some other guys who could be part of this discussion down the road?
I'm literally writing it as I've been muted. So I went with like seven guys. I was only planning to go to five. I went with seven. And if you want to,
well, don't give us all seven, because we want people to also read it. So who are two of those seven?
But like, I've already tipped my hat on Luis Peña. He's in that mix. He could be, you know, he's at what, like 70 right now, something like that. If he keeps doing this, he'll be much higher than that. I mean, go look at the numbers he's put up in Low A. They're better than Madé's. It's a smaller sample. Dude's already stolen 13 bags. He hit .393 in the DSL last year, although DSL batting title is not always the best indicator of anything, but it's nice. I've mentioned, you know, there was a guy who got a whole lot of really positive feedback during the first round of top 100 rejiggering, and that would be Eduardo Tait with the Phillies. I've been on him for a little while. We were just talking about, because he's a young 18-year-old as well. We're talking like how high would he go in this year's draft, and our draft Knicks believe, you know, possible top 10 guy, and I don't doubt it, a left-handed catcher who has already posted a 90th percentile exit velocity of 108 miles an hour with wood. The way I best describe him when I saw him last summer was he makes 95 look like 85. It's pretty darn impressive to see that from anybody, let alone a guy on the left side. Whether he sticks at catcher is an open secret, but open question, really. But as we've proven with Moises Ballesteros today, you can be a big boy and stick beyond the position if you really work at it.
Or at least you can DH, because that's what
they're going to do. Yes, at least you can DH. As long as you can hit, you'll get to the big leagues. And then the third one I'll give is Arjun Nimala. We talked about DeVries, you know, doing what he did, as he has done in Fort Wayne. Well, the Northwest League in April is no picnic either. And he is leading or close to, well, he's not leading. He's among the top 10 in every major category, just about, in the league right now. I will grant you, it is not that difficult to do when the league has six teams, but he is doing very well. He's tied for the league lead in home runs with Lazaro Montes. He's got total bases. He's got extra base hits. He's got slug. He's very young. And it's kind of proof positive that, like, this is a guy who's, the other three we're talking about went through unconventional development paths, but this guy had a bit of a hiccup to start the year last year and went back to, I think, either extended or the Florida Complex League. I don't remember, depending on what time of year it was. He came back.
I think he went to extended, which turned into the Florida
Complex. Yeah. And he hit 13 bombs in the Florida State League, which is not anything to sneeze at. And he's proving the Blue Jays right now. Like, he's looking like a stud. And there's four more guys. And I think if you think real hard out there, Prospect Knicks, you can probably guess where I'm going with some of
them. You can get all the insights on that at baseballamerica.com for our subscribers. And we appreciate you for subscribing and to get all this great insight and these updated top hundreds and all that. Jeff, I want to give you a shot before we go too. So who's someone else that you would say, like, hey, got my eye on? I know you've been pouring through the data as well, and watching more MILB TV than any person should healthily watch. Who is someone that jumps out to you as well? And if you wanted to say Nimala, because I know that's one of your dudes too, that's also okay.
Yeah, no, I think Nimala is definitely a good one. You know, and definitely one that I would probably keep in mind. I think another one that's right in line with that is Connor Griffin. I know that there's more questions on the hit tool with Connor Griffin. It's kind of a similar narrative to where Arjun Nimala was a year ago. There were some questions in the draft, kind of a divisive prospect at draft time. There were some that liked the player, others that really wrote him off, just in terms of the hit tool. Obviously, he went a little bit higher in the draft and made a little bit more money than Nimala, but both first-round picks. He's just so tooled up, and, you know, I see a guy like this that can hit the ball that hard, that can run like this, that does have maybe some overzealous swing decisions, but pretty good zone contact. And I think that's very fixable. And, you know, I sort of see huge upside. Like, this could be a Fernando Tatis type of player if it all comes together. Now, that's obviously a very low percentage, but, like, I think he's another guy that could be in this conversation just because of what the upside is. If, you know, he takes progressive steps with the swing decisions and the bat to ball gets a little better because of it, because he's not exposing himself as much in terms of, you know, swinging out of the zone and chasing bad pitches. And we saw the updated swing and some of the power displays he was putting on in spring training, Josh. So, like, I'm sure you're totally with me on that one. So, yeah, I think that he's interesting. He's also playing shortstop and playing center field. I think that's another one that, you know, sort of puts him into, like, a very unique category in terms of the defensive versatility that he has.
That's another interesting one. This is probably the only baseball podcast you'll listen to. The Pete Rose news is breaking as we're recording this, that he's no longer ineligible because he's, but we're not going to talk about that on this pod. Plenty of other options for that one. So I can tell on Jeff's face that I just broke that news to him, it looks like.
At least I have another 7 years until I vote. So I don't think I'm going to have any input into this situation whatsoever. So.
But that's a great way to wrap this up. Fun discussion of three of the best young prospects in the game, three of the best shortstop prospects, and three of our top 10 prospects in baseball right now. Fully updated top 100 prospect list over at baseballamerica.com. For Jeff, for Josh, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
Get a fresh start feeling for less. At Matalan, there's a huge 20% off homeware and kidswear. Get your home and garden prepped for the sunny weather and kit out the kids too. Shop in-store and online at matalan.co.uk. T's and C's apply.